and welcome to this edition of the FT Advisor podcast. My name is Tom Dunstan, and I am delighted to be joined for this edition by London Money Director Martin Stewart and Saffron for Intermediaries Head of Business Development Tony Hall. A very warm welcome to you both.
Morning.
A recent report from the Office for Budgetary Responsibility has predicted that house prices will decrease by about 4.7% next year. This follows an increase of 0.9% that was recorded this year. In addition to this, the office also reported expecting house transactions to fall by 6.9% in 2024, a 1.9% steeper decline than forecasts it made in March of 5%. So to start off with, I suppose, does the OBR's predictions reflect what you're expecting for next year? Tony, if I could come to you first.
It's very hard with predictions at the moment, isn't it, to put any certainty behind it, but it's kind of based on common sense that affordability is a challenge, therefore people can't borrow as much, and therefore the prevailing price of houses is going to either stay the same or drop to match that affordability level. So yeah, it's kind of what we're seeing. It's what that amount will be, I think, is the big challenge. But contrary to a lot of, you know, comment around a big crash or whatever, I think it's just a settling of the market as we come to terms with the new normal, which is interest rates at the 4.5% to 5.5% rate.
And Marty, if I could ask you the same question, is this does this reflect what you're expecting?
I'd be very happy if they were only going to decline by that amount. We've seen in 2023 probably a reduction of around about 20% so far in terms of transactions, and that's a greater amount if you look in the buy-to-let sector, where we're probably down 50% on various demographics. So look, if transactions fall only by 7% next year, I think we should all be celebrating the good news and not lamenting the bad news. That said, I do think a reduction in housing transactions is worse for the market than a reduction in house prices. As Tony just said then, I think a reduction in house prices is probably welcome to a degree, because the higher and faster they were going, then the more likelihood that we would have seen a significant crash. And I agree with Tony, I don't think we will see that. We might just see a softening in prices. But transactions levels are important just from a cash flow point of view for anyone involved in the housing market, whether that's an estate agent, a lender, a broker or a conveyancer. And that's where there may be a gap in income in 2024.
And so what could this prediction mean for the mortgage market and for mortgage advisors as well?
Firstly, I'd ignore them. As Tony said, you can't, you look at some of the predictions that people were making as we went into COVID and lockdown in 2020, the predictions that came off the back of Trustonomics and Quasi statement back in September last year. And, you know, there are plenty of predictions out there at the moment that are predicting a 20 to 30% reduction in house prices. You know, it's unlikely to happen. And I think predictions are a dangerous thing to make. I think we have to, as an industry, work with what we've got. Whether that's a booming market or a stalling market or even a falling market, we just have to work with that. What I do say to our team is that bad housing markets don't last, but good brokers do. And I think that's worth remembering as we go into to 2024, that we've been through many, many cycles. I've lost count now, I'm that old, but I remember many, many cycles where, you know, people have talked about the end of the housing market, talks about the end of mortgage intermediation, and yet, you know, like the crocodile, 4 billion years later, we're still here. And I think we will be here at the end of 2024 and into 2025. And I do also think the intermediary market will come out of this stronger, which we always do after a downturn. So I think we need to focus more on that. Let the market find its feet, let it find the floor if there is one, keep the lights on, and carry on with the day job.
Tom, I 100% agree. This market, as I said, I'm old enough to be around it a few times as well, and it always prevails. You know, it has its ups and downs, but the reality is people buy and sell houses, people move, people don't move. It's what it is. It's just at what point in the cycle and at the expense of doing that. So from an advisor perspective, I think it's just carry on regardless. But I think the key for this is about educating your buyers, as you, particularly first-time buyers, around the realities of the market, and the fact that you can try and wait for the unicorn of rates to drop back down to sub 3%, but that's not going to happen. So it's a case of, if you can afford to do it now, do it now, and go and seek professional advice to find the best way to do that. So I think that's the key for the market. You know, people are always going to want to buy houses and sell houses and move. And as I said just a minute ago, it's about getting the right advice to not worry about the things that you need to do. Because the relative is, if house prices drop and you're in the second time chain, then that means you're not going to get as much for yours, but the house you're buying is going to have a pro rata drop as well. So the status is exactly the same. In reality, it's just some points in the market are going to cost you a lot more than others. I always hark back to my first mortgage, and I was over the moon because I fixed at 8.99, and I was delighted with that, because the prevailing underlying base rate was probably 12% at that point. So it's relative.
One of the things I'm interested in from the report is the projected fall of house prices by 5%, while transactions fall by 7%. I was wondering if you're able to explain the situation in which that would occur.
From my point of view, I think it comes down quite simply to confidence. What we've had, unfortunately, for the last 12 months is a bit of media mania about the housing market, and they do love a good negative housing market story. It's virtually impossible, I think, for anyone now not to know what's going on in the housing market. This time last year, when we were in the middle of the trauma after the autumn statement, it was all brand new information. It was brand news, and nobody knew how to react. There was panic in the market. There was blood on the streets, and an awful lot of sleepless nights. Now, 12 months later, there's no one, anyone with a mortgage or anyone looking to move, cannot come into the market and not know what's been happening. So that, in some respects, is actually quite good news. It certainly saves us a job in terms of trying to explain things. They follow the news as much as anybody else. So as Tony said, if people need to move, they will move. And, you know, if we are looking for some silver linings, I would suggest that after a pretty average summer and a very poor September, October and November, we saw a huge spike in purchases. So people are now coming to terms with the new cost of borrowing. And as Tony said, if you can afford that, then move. If you have to move, and people will move. What the market is missing, and this will result in an element of the fall in transactions, is the discretionary mover. The people that have moved over the past 10 years when, hang on a minute, I can borrow £500,000 interest only, it's going to cost me less than £800 a month. Let's go and get a bigger house. Suddenly that move is now £3,000 a month. So the discretionary mover are the ones that are sitting on the hands. So that will lead to a natural fall in transactions, along with a degree of, well, let's just wait a little bit, you know, let's just wait 6 months. We don't need to rush to make this purchase now. So again, the other thing that's missing in the market right now is urgency. And until that begins to return in a degree of volume, we will probably be plateauing and flatlining for a while.
So is there anything that you think advisors could or should do to prepare themselves for the described landscape, or if there's anything that brokers can do to keep the lights on, as you said earlier, Martin?
It's a difficult one to answer, because we've got a little bit of a fragmented intermediate market right now, whereby you've got the gnarled veterans, and I include myself in that without a shadow of a doubt, who have seen everything, just waiting for the aliens now to complete the set. And you've got the younger brokers who've come through in the past 3 or 4 years, who've really only known one market, and that's the ability to recommend very cheap 2-year fixed rates. And they've not really had the ability to build a client bank that will give them some substance going into 2024. So we're a mature broker with a good client bank. They will always have a demand. There's always enough people in the background, either just direct business or word of mouth, that will come into the market. Product transfers kept the industry going for the first 6 months of this year, and you don't have that if you've, you're a young client or a young business that hasn't got that back book to rely on. So in terms of leaving the light on, I think what you have to do if you haven't got a deep client bank is just to be visible, and to let people know that you are there. And thankfully this time around, something we didn't have in 2008 was social media. So you do see a lot of people now using social media to their benefit, and they are being out there, they are being visible. I don't necessarily agree sometimes with how the messages are being portrayed, and it can be a little bit gimmicky, rolling around on a skateboard while talking about interest rates. I'm not too sure that necessarily resonates with everyone, but it might do with the younger generation. But again, that's me being old school. But I think if you can just be seen to be there to know where people are when the time is right for them to move, and they will remember you, whether you're on a skateboard or not, they will remember you, and that will be a call to arms that you can then answer.
Yes. Just following on to Martin's point, I think for advisors, it's don't be the other thing I would suggest. You know, we're in that specialist complex lending scenario, which actually a lot of mainstream advisors will steer clear of through not understanding or want to give business away to third parties. Is diversify. There is huge opportunity in this market for brokers to stretch beyond their comfort zone in terms of the products they advise on. And there's a lot of support out there from lenders and clubs and networks, wherever you go, to do that. So that's the biggest thing I would say. I also think towards that, to Martin's point about visibility, that's a really key point, because we recently at Saffron did a study via YouGov on self-employed. And one of the big stats was that 75% of the self-employed people surveyed didn't know they could get a mortgage, or didn't believe they could get a mortgage as a self-employed person. So the quest that I've been on is to get us as lenders and advisors to really consider, what do you say, or what does your website say about how you can help people? You know, if your website isn't saying that I can help you in your scenario, self-employed or contracts or whatever it might be, Those people are going along thinking I can't do anything, and either paying too much for a mortgage or not getting the house they really want. So the key is, have a look at yourself and your website and go, what are you saying about how you can support this market in its current cycle?
Can I just jump in quickly and add two things onto what Tony said there, because they're all very good points. That diversification of services and products will help, because there will be a drop in income. It's inevitable. I'm seeing it in our own numbers, and I think we've got a very well-run business. So if we're seeing it, I guarantee everyone else will be seeing that. So whether that's into equity release, specialist lending, protection size, I think brokers do need to fill that gap by broadening their product offering. And that point there as well, Tony said about self-employed and complex. This market is made for intermediation. With more and more bank branch closures, the inability to ring up a bank, which can easily take an hour. I did that myself recently. I had to ring Barclays, unfortunately, on a personal matter, and I almost died in the process of old age. It's the banks are pushing the consumer to us. We should recognise that they haven't got the capacity or the ability or even the desire to offer wholesale mortgage advice. So in terms of complex markets, this is made for us. So the broker should not only broaden their product offering, but improve their knowledge on what's going on in the market. So when that complex case comes to you, you're not stammering or stuttering, you know, straight away. There's an opportunity for the client and for the broker to introduce them to the right lender first time around.
Absolutely. And that's what basically my BDM team do on a daily basis. You know, we've been exploring what does business development mean. And it doesn't just mean, right, we're here to flog you a Saffron mortgage for your client, right? Although that's not a bad thing. This is about how do we, shameless plug there, this is more about how do we work with you as a business partner to help you uncover areas that you've shied away from or naturally don't understand. You know, we see a lot of people, you know, a lot of brokers, a lot of experience. So that by osmosis is it, but if you could use it anyway, we can pass that on, and it massively helps firms. We've seen firms, for example, we are really strong at self-build. It's one of our strong product areas. We are experts at it, and a lot of brokers shy away from this because of concerns and fears over this what can deem to be a confusing or tricky mortgage to arrange. It's not. It's a bit longer. You've got to do a bit more. But with our help, we've got a whole new cohort of brokers now entering this space. So it's all about how do we help you build your business, because that helps build our business.
And I also want to ask if the OBR's predictions become accurate. Is there any sense of how this could hit different aspects of the mortgage market, such as for first-time buyers or buy-to-lets?
I think we're giving too much credence to the OBR report. I mean, it wasn't that long ago they suddenly found an extra 2% GDP from a couple of years ago down the back of the sofa. So I think we've got to be careful that we don't start looking at this as almost like it's gospel and it's written tablet and it's the truth. The housing market is a very nuanced business, okay, and it is built upon a very simple premise of consumer confidence. And if that's there, we have a busy housing market. And if that disappears, we have a very poor performing housing market. So we are inching towards a degree of consumer confidence now. And the longer that stays, then the busier we will all become. First-time buyers are probably and have sat on their hands a little bit because they're in no particular rush to enter the market. If they're reading in the Daily Mail that house prices are, you know, going to fall 20%, why would you rush to buy one? You might just sit and wait. Their issue is not affordability. They have no reference point. They have no anchor to base rate at 0.1%. So if their borrowing rate is 5% and they can afford it, then they can move forward. The buy-to-let side of stuff has been difficult. And I'm only talking here about London, which is the vast majority of where our clients are based. It's a very poor performing market right now. That doesn't mean to say that buy-to-let is dead. It will just have to evolve going forward and maybe into more semi-commercial and maybe more outlier towns that are further away from London where the stress tests really don't work at all. So we've seen a big decline in buy-to-let purchases, and we have seen a big increase in landlords saying that they plan to exit the market in London and the South East. Goes back to what we said at the very start. If you have to move, just move. There's no point waiting for a perfect time. Otherwise, you know, we'd all be living in caves waiting for that to happen. It doesn't exist. The perfect time, it doesn't exist. The right time is always there. And it's up to the consumer to decide to when to strike and move. And we'll all just sit there and service that particular need as and when it's appropriate. I think if we're trying to engineer a market, we might be in for a long wait. We have to sit and wait for the consumer to confirm that they're happy with their micro personal circumstances and the macroeconomic picture that they operate in. And when those two marry up, we'll have an active market.
Yeah, I'd echo that. From what we're seeing, we are seeing, it's really quite postcode specific what we're seeing in terms of some brokers are going, we're really, really busy with purchase inquiries, and others saying it's absolutely dead and I'm hanging on to product transfers as a way to continue. So I think it really is that difference. But to Martin's point, it really is. I think the biggest thing that kind of makes this clear around hanging and waiting, it is an article that someone posted on LinkedIn a few weeks ago about an interest rate rise in 1957 that saw a rapid base rate rise to 7.5%. And I suppose the story is from that is if you went then held on for 18 months before buying, hoping that rate would drop, thinking it would drop, you'd end up waiting 51 years because that rate didn't get back down until 2008. So you'd have had 51 years more renting if you were a first-time buyer. And in that prevailing 51 years, house prices went up 9,351%. So the moral is, if you can afford to buy at the point you need to buy and don't worry about it. But that's what an advisor's job is to do, and go and find a professional one that will help you make that choice and help you see that. Don't read the article saying, oh, it's going to be fine, wait for a bit, because you could be waiting an awful long time.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much both for joining me for this edition of the FC Advisor podcast. And thank you very much for listening.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.